Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Before I forget, I want to welcome another new affiliate to the Hometown Heroes family. Power Talk 1460 and 101 FM, covering a beautiful part of the Golden State, Monterey, Santa Cruz, and the city that gave us a World War II war correspondent turned legendary author named John Steinbeck. That would be Salinas, California. I look forward to meeting some more veterans in that neck of the woods, and it's always great to have another station step up and say, you know, our listeners sure should hear what these veterans have to say. We've been working on an attitude of gratitude today in light of Thanksgiving, and the next voice you'll hear certainly embodies that. I caught up with him in Bonita Springs, Florida, a P-47 pilot who was extremely fortunate to have survived being shot down over enemy territory. But then, like the first veteran you heard from today, Dean Whitaker, he was taken to Stalag Luft 3 in Zagon, which is now in Poland. This is the camp that served as inspiration for the classic film The Great Escape. If you've never seen that one, pick it up. So one of the things that I asked Ray Maloney was, did you hear about escapes when you arrived at Stalag Luft 3?
In fact, I talked to some of the fellows who had escaped and were recaptured and weren't part of the 50 that were executed. 76 got out, and 3 made it to Sweden. So, but the Germans recaptured 73 of them and executed 50 of them. Mm-hmm. And so the other 20-some were put back in the camp, and I got to talk to a couple of them off and on. They were all mostly RAF guys, you know.
Well, and you would end up spending a lot of time with the RAF guys because
where they had the compound with them, yeah. I was the only American in my room. They were all Englishmen.
What was life like in that POW camp on a day-to-day basis? What kinds of things did you do to pass the time, and what kind of kept you going?
First of all, you know, as I mentioned when we started talking, Paul, being a prisoner of war is a degrading, humiliating kind of experience, and it's not something that I'm proud of. It didn't take any skill or, you know, specialty to get captured. And because I didn't finish my tour, and a lot of my friends did, and a lot of my friends were killed, I always felt guilty about being. I could tell from talking to other people in the camp, they have the same feeling, that it's a terrible guilt feeling that you're not helping at this point, you know. Even though your instructions are, when you are captured, you are still a military, you're still U.S. Army, and your responsibility is to do what you can to, you know, confuse, confound, and, you know, aggravate the enemy as much as you can.
That's probably my favorite line from that movie, The Great Escape. It's put so well by, I think, one of the British officers, the character in that film, where he says it's the sworn duty of every serviceman to escape, do everything you can to escape. So did you do any of those things?
Well, I was, you know, a junior. Here I am, a second lieutenant. I'd just been shot down, and I was in a room with fellows that had been down since Tobruk, you know, 4 years before that, you know. So they had all the experience in the world. And I was a know-nothing, you know, an American. But you knew that they had learned over the months and years how to survive mentally and emotionally, you know, in a prison camp. And it helped me get through, you know. As you say, you've got this guilt feeling, and they would talk about it too, that, you know, we're here and we're not doing anything. But at the same time, I had heard stories about the Germans, at least the ones that ran the camps, were kind of single-minded, you know. And the British are delightful at deceiving, and you know, what looks like something is not really it. You know, the British are great at this. And they would, the story I used to get was that they would occasionally leave a plan for tunnels that didn't exist, you see, and they'd leave them somewhere where the German ferrets, we used to have guards come through with overalls on and screwdrivers and flashlights, and they were forever climbing under the barracks or in the attic, you know, something, trying to find what we're doing, you know, escape activities. They would just go in great glee when the Germans had found some plan for underground tunnels, you see, and then the Germans would bring in trucks and to ride around the outside to try to collapse any of the tunnels and drive big iron bars down into the ground, you know, to feel if they're going to hit the top of the tunnel. And the Brits would just sit there, you know, and giggle and watch all this, you know.
That's classic.
It was nothing, yeah. They knew how to survive, you know. Now, the food.
I've heard some stories now.
Yeah, right. The movies never describe, you know, never get into this. But there is an absolute eternal hunger, a yearning for food. You don't get enough food, and you're hungry. It's gnawing at you. The only thing that kept us alive was Red Cross parcels used to come through. Not all the time, but when they came through, the package was about 11 pounds of food, and it had like a can of corned beef and some biscuits and a chocolate bar, couple of packs of cigarettes, powdered milk in a can, you know, things of this sort. And it was designed to keep one man alive for 1 week. But the whole time I was a POW, the most they ever got was half a carton a week. So two men to a carton per week. So we were starving, you know, slowly starving. I only know my own experience, although everybody was turning into a skeleton. I was always a tall, skinny kid, and when I was shot down, I weighed 165, and when I was liberated and the Americans weighed me, I weighed 125. So I had gone through 40 pounds in just 6 months.
Makes you wonder how much longer you could have survived.
Yeah, it's this gnawing, and it's 24 hours a day. When you sleep, you dream about food, and they had a little game, a torturous game, naming some dish or menu that we hadn't thought of before, you know, and somebody would say, I got another one, pineapple upside down cake. And I would say, oh.
Just dreaming of food.
Yeah,
huh?
Just dreaming of food. It was tough.
What do you think was the worst thing that you had to stomach just because it was some kind of sustenance?
Probably the what we call the blood sausage. It was, you know, like a thing about that round, and you got little cuts of the sausage, and it was foul meat, but at least it was some meat, some protein.
Did you ever fear that you would die there in the POW camp?
Not right in the camp, but as the Russians were advancing, and of course the Americans and the British were advancing, the rumors started to come that we were going to be evacuated and taken down into an Austrian redoubt, where the Germans were going to hide out to the end. The scuttlebutt was we were going to be the bargaining chip. They were going to hold us to the last minute and then bargain us out in terms of more favorable surrenders.
Right.
You know, and of course, we had been evacuated once from Sargon when the Russians got the
night. Tell me about that. That must have been quite an interesting experience.
It was a snowstorm, you know. We had been following, you know, the Russians, and we knew they were getting closer and closer. And the night they put us on the road, the Rouse came through the barracks, you know, Rouse, 30 minutes, Rouse, we're leaving, 30 minutes. So you gathered up all whatever little, you know, things you had and prepared to march, and there was probably 6-8 inches snow on the ground. It was freezing, and it was snowing. And as we were being marched out of the camp, we could hear machine gun fire. Now, I don't know whether it was Germans firing, but the rumor passed through the group was that's the Russian advance patrols. They're that close that on the east side of Sargon, you could hear the machine gun fire. And, of course, we started marching west. And we went through, I think, 4 nights and 5 days marching. And it was that was the worst winter that they had had in 50 years in Germany.
Yeah.
And I read later, and I had heard some, you know, stories about it when we were doing this, how cold it was. But the average temperature, they were saying, for that march was 17 below zero. So it was freezing cold, you know.
And while all this is going on, your wife back home doesn't even know if you're dead or alive.
My mother and her got the notice Thanksgiving Day, and it was right around, give or take a day, around New Year's before they finally found that I was a POW.
So until then,
the first one you get is missing in action.
So they weren't sure you were alive until they got one that said
you
were POW.
Right. Yeah, from Thanksgiving to New Year's.
But you didn't know if she knew.
Yeah, no, you don't know. And, so, and the whole time I was presiding, I never got a letter from anybody because they told me that it would take 6 months or better before you got your first letter. You know, I never got it.
So you're marching through the snow, trying to stay warm at night, waiting for a little more food. I'm sure your feet are freezing.
Oh, it was terrible. Yeah. Feet got wet and we were tired. You know, we had no stamina. You know, we couldn't do this. And in the back, everybody's mind was, don't go fast. Slow this down as far. We were hoping the Russians would overtake us.
Sure.
Know? So
you have better odds that way, huh?
And the POWs would stretch out for miles. It was, you know, thousands.
And eventually, you made it to Stalag 7A in Moosburg, Germany, where General Patton and your liberators would arrive in April of 1945.
I guess around noontime, the shooting seemed to stop. And it was quiet for a while. And then German flag came down, and we were all watching this. An American flag, I can't even say it without.
You're overcome with emotion right now, remembering that.
And it went up, and it was upside down first time. Came down, and then it went up, and we all cheered.
Wow. Yeah. I can't imagine what that felt like after everything you've been through from the time that you got out of that airplane until then. I mean, that just had to be the most glorious thing you ever saw.
Yeah, it was. I'm sorry.
I think everyone understands the emotions that must be going through your heart right now.
Another one of my most emotional moments of my military career was we came into New York City, and we was, you know, as I said, the wounded came first, and then the POW. So we were very early in returning, and of course the country was still celebrating, you know, the fact that we had won. And as we're coming up the straits, you know, Staten Island and Brooklyn on one side, you know, the New York Harbor.
Well, you certainly did. That's your hometown. What a place to come back to.
I know. But along on the Brooklyn side, there was a kind of grassy bank, and they had a sign in plants, you know, all very cleverly done. And here I go. I'm going to say, the sign said, welcome home. Well done. I can't even. I'm sorry.
What message could have meant more to you in that moment than that? No one's ever shared that anecdote with me, and I know everyone at home is feeling the emotion of that moment for you. So many veterans, especially POWs, who learned what it felt like to live in the absence of freedom, have shared that when they did sail in, if they came into New York, that's something you sail past before you get to the port.
Yeah,
had special significance, too. When you saw Lady Liberty, what did that mean to you?
Oh, yeah. It was heaven. Yeah. Like coming alive again. You know. And then when we tried to dock, there were so many people, you know, the POWs on the side of the boat that was docking, because there was a lot of people, you know, waving handkerchiefs and everything. They kept announcing, please get away from the starboard side. Because the ship was actually listing, you know, and they couldn't dock it in the position that it was in. And, you know, we were saying, stuff it, you know.
Do you know what we've been through? We're getting off this ship.
Yeah, right.
I'll say it one more time. Do we really understand just how much we have to be thankful for as Americans? That was Ray Maloney. Find out more about him and all the other veterans you heard from today at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and join us again next week when we're reminded once more through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.